We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Come on. Welcome to Money Savage REI, and welcome our guest, the strong and powerful Neil Bawa. Neil, are you ready to do this?
Absolutely, George. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. Neil is a real estate investor. He is a technologist, a data scientist, an educator, and the CEO of Grow Capitus and Multifamily U. You'll have to update my numbers, Neil, but you have probably around 3,000 units serving over 500 investors.
Somewhere in that range, yep. Both of those numbers are quite accurate.
Perfect. Well, if you would, tell us a little bit more about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. As you mentioned, George, I like to introduce myself as a geek, a nerd, a dork. All of those things work for me because I think that I come from the world of high technology. I live in Silicon Valley. And I'm very deeply entrenched in the philosophy of Silicon Valley, which is extraordinary rate of change, you know, record everything, measure everything, right? So, you know, my key mantras are, you know, you can only manage what you can measure, and data beats gut feel by a million miles, right? So those are two kind of the cornerstones of our business, very technology driven. In fact, I often tell people, and this is only partially a joke, that I am doing a very good job of running a technology company that is masquerading as a real estate company, right? So everyone in our company is a technologist. We use an extraordinary level of tools. The last time we counted, we had 81 cloud software in use in the company that we're paying for subscriptions. 2/3 of our employees live in the Philippines, 1/3 live in the United States. So 10 people in the US full time, 20 in the Philippines. And then we have about 100 staff at our properties. So we don't usually count them as our employees because technically we supervise them, but they're actually employed by the property, the project. Roughly 10 states that we're active in, actually not roughly, exactly 10 states that we're active in. There are 18 current projects, about almost $400 million value. Bread and butter is multifamily. But we also do a lot of student housing. So multifamily and student housing are kind of the bread and butter. And then we do storage and industrial as well. We build townhomes. We have 3 divisions of our company, and that's where we are unusual. You know, I'm pretty sure you've had syndicators before on your podcast. But the vast majority of syndicators, they simply take an existing product. Maybe it's a self-storage, maybe it's a mobile home park, maybe it's an apartment, and then they improve it. And we do that as well, but that is not the bulk of our business. So we have 3 divisions. There's the value add division. It's only about $100 million at this point because we've sold off some of the assets. And the about $150 million is new construction. So that's a separate division where we're a developer. Right now we've got industrial projects in development. We've got a lot of multifamily in development. We've also got townhomes in development. And then the third project of our company, which is by far the fastest growing, you know, portion of our business, is that we build fourplexes for investors. So don't think of it as a syndication, even though sometimes it ends up being a syndication because we take investor money to build those. But more and more, we simply, you know, go to a customer and say, here's what we're building. Here's what's going to look like. This is when you'll get the key. this is what your tenants are going to be paying, and here's your property manager. So we basically create that turnkey experience that's very common in the US, but we create it for new construction, and hand over the keys to them after the tenants are already in, the property manager's already in, the property's already completed. So they're not signing on these expensive recourse loans, which most people are afraid of for new construction. They're afraid of construction delays. Given that people have a locked-in price with us, if construction is delayed by 4 months, it costs them exactly $0. So that's the fourplex division of our company, and is very fast-growing with fourplexes in pretty much all of the top markets in Texas. And also in Idaho. Idaho Falls is the fastest growing city in the United States, so we invest there. So three different divisions keeps us quite busy, George.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second. This episode is brought to you by Money Alignment Academy. If you are looking for a financial wellness platform for your company, your organization, and your employees, check out moneyalignmentacademy.com or click on the link in the notes of the show. I certainly appreciate everything you were talking about with technology and taking that sort of Silicon Valley ethos and then applying it to real estate. What advantages do you get from all the technology that you're incorporating?
Well, I think the first advantage is a state of mind. Technologists believe in looking at data at on a continuous basis and changing their mind all the time. So I'll give you Dr. Fauci as an example, right? So Dr. Fauci was recently asked by, he was on Fox News. So they were asking him questions about, well, you said X, and notice that a month later you said Y, and which was like almost the diametric opposite. So should we even trust you? And he says, everybody that believes in science is like that. We're not tied to any particular point of view. So I absolutely reserve the right to go in this direction and then look at the data 15 days later and make a U-turn, right? And that is refreshing. I mean, you don't see that in real estate all the time. People have their bully pulpits and they're saying, this is best. They say things like multifamily is best, and 5 years later, it's best. 10 years later, it's best. Why? Because they're doing multifamily. Well, our approach is, if multifamily becomes second best, we're going to fixate on what is best and how can we do it, right? So when we got into industrial, it was because 3 consecutive years, industrial has beaten multifamily in terms of investor sentiment. You know, most people don't do that. I mean, it's a Silicon Valley thing to pivot as necessary, but it's not, you don't see that in real estate. People are just doing the same thing over and over again. Once in 10 years, they might do a pivot. We do a pivot practically every year. And I think, so the first thing is, it's about a mindset. The second piece of it is, there's this obsessive, focus on data. Right. And sometimes it's not good, but I think 99% of the time it's good. Like most people, when they look at their markets, so they spend a year, they go develop that market, and then they stay in there for 5 to 10 years. But during that time, even if they'd done their research early on, maybe that market was top 5% in the US, but today it's top 10%. Well, they still stay there. Why? Because they'd spent all that time and effort developing the market, developing the people, getting comfortable with all of the people that they work with in that market. So they feel like it makes sense to them to stay, and there's nothing wrong with what they're saying. But if you were a technologist who delivered a process, created a process to open a new market, then you could create new markets each year. So believe it or not, this year, for the first time, we're opening 2 markets in the same year, and neither one of them is a primary or secondary market. We focus on tertiary markets because most people are afraid of them, but we use data to convince ourselves that it's the right place to go to. So New Brunsfels and Idaho Falls in Idaho, New Brunsfels in Texas, are the two markets that we're opening this year that we've never invested in before. One of them we've been fairly, actually both of them we've been within kind of a couple hundred miles, but not, in that metro. And so that is the second approach, where you basically you're obsessively chasing the best markets in the United States, even though it means that you end up recreating all of your contacts practically every year.
Well, I could certainly see the benefits there, and I can also see why the majority of people would not want to pursue that, because it sounds like it's hard.
It's extremely hard. I think that, but we built that into the company ethos, and we can't back off from it now, right? So in January each year, I do a presentation that about 10,000 people watch. It's called Real Estate Trends, and it just came out a couple days ago, and we'll be doing it again over the next few weeks. And so we spend about 300 hours of work in December to collect over 200 articles, reports. You know, we go into our paid subscription software, pull stuff out, create data mashups, and use that to say, okay, here's where we think the markets are this year. So I can tell you the top two markets that we picked this year in that public session, the best market in the US and the most undervalued market in the US, neither one of them is the same as last year. So last year, it was a tie for best market in the US, which was Raleigh and Charlotte in North Carolina. And then the most under, you know, valued market in the US was San Antonio in Texas, right? So none of the superstars like Dallas or Houston or New York, you know, Los Angeles. These are the markets that we felt were good. Now, there's nothing wrong with San Antonio this year. There's absolutely nothing wrong with Raleigh and Charlotte this year. But this year we picked Phoenix as our top market in the United States, and we picked for the first time a Rust Belt market, Indianapolis, Indy, as our most undervalued market. And so people ask us, what's wrong with San Antonio? Why aren't you doing stuff there? The answer is nothing is wrong with San Antonio. Our goal is to pick the very best today. And both, you know, Raleigh, Charlotte, San Antonio are still in our top 10, but it's almost impossible for a market to stay the top market. Why? Because so much money floods into the market that, you know, incomes are going up 3%, home prices are going up 15%. Like, we, you know, Boise saw a 15% increase last year. It was our 2018 winner. It's impossible. That, you know, we don't rank markets by greatest. We rank markets by greatest to make a profit, right? And the moment you do that, it's very difficult for a market to be greatest, you know, a year later, because such an enormous amount of profit was made during that year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense in the world, right? It's like, oh, XYZ city is the number one market. That's where we should put all of our energy. But in fact, it's already too late at that point.
Correct. I usually try and look 2 years ahead. So I have a nugget for those of you that are watching, right? So, you've got, George, both, you know, single family type people, and then you got multifamily type people that watch it. So a lot of people ask me, you know, why is it that in your presentations you cover multifamily, because you're a multifamily guy, you're an apartment guy, but then you have a big section, you cover single family. Why do you cover that when you're not a single family guy? My answer is very simple. Single family, if you look at the data trends, you end up with an 18-month crystal ball, an actually working functional crystal ball, right? Because here's what happens. I mean, nobody, and my belief is that 90% of the people that live in apartments want to live in single family homes, maybe even higher than 90%, could be 95%. Why do they live in apartments? Because they have no choice, right? And people might say, yeah, but they're probably staying for a short amount of time. Well, now why not go rent a single family home for a short amount of time? They can do that, right? So most people that are staying in apartments are not really staying there by choice. And, you know, they may not want to buy a home, but, you know, of course they would rent a single family home if they could afford it compared to an apartment. So what I've learned over time is that the leading indicator of apartment profits in the US are not apartments. It's single family. If a market becomes ultra hot in the United States for single family, 18 months from this time, apartments will become ultra hot, because it takes 18 months for buyers in that market to decide, there is no way I'm going to catch up. My income's going up 3%, home prices are going up 12%. So within 18 months, those people have given it their best try, realized they've lost that race. And now they're like, okay, fine, I can't buy a single family home. I can't, you know, and I can't pay for a single family rental either. It's out of my budget. So I want the very best apartment. Those people want rehabbed apartments. And that's what we do. We rehab apartments, right? So what I've actually found is following the single family market is actually the best way to win in multifamily.
Nice. Well, that certainly does make sense. And that explains all the data, Neil.
That's right. We're currently tracking 400 markets. So people ask me, you know, about, like, for example, today I could tell you stuff for, like, you could have a 30-minute section with me on a city named Killeen. Killeen is a tiny, tiny city. And its only claim to fame, the only reason why I'm so fixated on Killeen being a good product, you know, good city to invest in, is it's 67 miles north of Austin. Mm. And a home in Austin is $437,000. A home in Killeen is $146,000. That is too much of a gap for 67 miles in a post-COVID world where most people working in technology in Austin probably don't need to go into the office more than once or twice a week after we're done with COVID. Why the heck would they want to live in Austin and deal with the traffic? They can live in Killeen, which is very nice, actually. It's a very nice area. You know, it's got a nice downtown. It's not like a suburb. It's got a very high rises. It's got a nice downtown, good restaurants. But $146,000 for a home. So I'm, and unfortunately, Killeen is too small for us to do multifamily, and we're probably not going to do anything with Killeen. But I'm obsessed with it because I know this is a great buy. And so it's just a gift to people that are listening to me. If they live in Texas, they should look at Killeen. Am I going to be there? Probably not.
Killeen just got a big bump right there. Nice. All right. So the fourplexes, the new construction on the fourplexes, it was that motivated just by your desire to continue pivoting into new business lines?
No, it was motivated by a very good answer that somebody gave us to a question that we are constantly asking. And that question is, in the realm of, you know, of housing, whether it's single family or multifamily, which one is better? As you can imagine, that's a question we get all the time. And my answer is always nuanced about, you know, if you do XXX, then single family is better. If you do YYY, multifamily is better. And a while back, somebody came back to me and said, you're wrong on both of those. The truth is, fourplexes are the best kind of housing. And I said, why? And the person basically went through a very detailed, you know, breakdown of the pros and cons of single family and the pros and cons of multifamily. And I realized that fourplexes have both. I don't like single family because the moment you lose your tenant, no one is paying your mortgage, right? There's no scale. It's very difficult to scale up. Fourplexes, when you lose a tenant, you have 75% of your income coming in, so your mortgage is being paid. So that, right, you know, the scalability is addressed. And if you end up with 10 fourplexes, that's 40 single family homes or close to the rent for 40. But what you're getting for fourplexes that is so magical compared to any multifamily is 30-year loans at what, you know, right now it's 2.8, 2.9%, 30-year loans, right? You can never get that on multifamily. At best, we get 10-year loans, and those are kind of hard to get. None of them are at 2.9%. They're always going to be more expensive. And the other problem with multifamily is if you get a 10-year loan, if you want to exit in year five, you're going to be paying $1 million in defeasance. So that, I mean, I had to agree, and this was several years ago, George. I had to agree that from the perspective of having the largest pool of buyers, you know, 1031 people very rarely do multifamily. Some do, some, you know, rich guys do, but 99% of 1031 people stay in the 1% to 4% range. And of the 1, 2, 3, and 4, I can tell you that 80% of them would pick 4 simply because it's got the scale. If they have the money, they would always pick the 4. Option. So what I realized was that the person was right. His argument was very, very sound. It was very data driven. But I didn't have a product like that. So I went out and said, could I make money by rehabbing fourplexes? And the answer is no, there's no volume there. Then I said, could I make money by building fourplexes? And it took me a year and a half to answer that question. And now that I've answered it, I'm delighted because I feel like the greatest value that I provide to my investors are the ones that are buying fourplexes. And people might say, you know, yeah, new construction fourplexes, low cash, you know, cash on it. My answer to them is very simple. You know, compared to syndications where you're buying into one of my value add projects, and there's nothing wrong with syndications. You know, still a majority of our business is going to be syndications. Problem is, I'm going to sell it in 3 to 5 years. And when I sell it, it'll be a depreciation recapture. So I tell people when you're buying fourplexes from us that are new construction, what is the hold time? And I tell them the ideal hold time is your kids will decide when to sell it after you are dead.
Right.
Right? That's the hold time. You're never going to sell it because you want that depreciation, $40,000 a year every year for 27 and a half years. And you want to refinance after year 7. So people tell me, you know, when do you refinance? The answer is year 7. And they're like, why 7? That's a very specific number. Why not 6? Why not 8? So I said, 90% of fourplexes by the 7th year have enough equity so that when you pull out the equity with the refinance, you are down to $0 invested, right? So now you've switched to what is known as infinite returns, right? You have no money in the product. You've pulled out the money. So after 7 years, you pull it out. And guess what you do? You buy another fourplex. And now you've got one behind the first one 7 years after. So when you run out of depreciation from the first one, the second one's climbing in depreciation, right? So that to me is a what I call a generational wealth vision that I've never been able to give my investors for value-add apartments. Because again, depreciation is getting recaptured every 5 years. So it's a great way to make money, but it's not generational wealth.
I love it. Very powerful. Well, Neil, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
So, you know, it's a book. And you know, it's very kind of cliche to talk about books making all the difference, but I have a point to make here. It's not the best book in the world. It's not even my most favorite book. But I think it's the most enabling book I've ever read because it allows me to read other books, right? That's its gift. And the book is called The Miracle Morning, right? So it's a book that gives you a set of toolkits on what to do from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning, or if you want to wake up late from 6 to 7. It gives you an hour, and it's a process that I follow, and I have my own little tweaks to it. And what I've found is this. Pre-Miracle Morning, I was reading about 6 to 8 business books a year. Post-Miracle Morning, I'm reading 20. And those 20 are the important ones. They are the ones where my aha moments are. Miracle Morning just enabled me. So to me, I think it becomes the most important book of all.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets come on.
Come on.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds like that was the key right there. Nice.
It was a game changer for me.
Love it. Well, Neil, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you, and how can investors or potential investors connect with you?
So there's two ways to connect with me. The first one is really simple. My name is Neil Bawa, N-E-A-L, last name Bawa, B-A-W-A. Type that into Google, hit enter. I happen to be the only Neil Bawa on the web. So if there's somebody bitching about me, you're going to find out real soon, right? There's about 100 podcasts and a dozen conferences that I'm teaching at that are live on the web. So check those out. The second way is to go to multifamily. That's one word, U, multifamily followed by the letter U. Multifamily U is a collection of geeks, dorks, and nerds that are very much into data-driven presentations, not just on multifamily, but we do multifamily, single family, all of the commercial asset classes, student housing, senior housing, industrial, mobile home parks, you know, storage. So we do all of those, and we do 20 webinars a year. They're very detailed, fairly long. It's, you know, they're usually 75 to 90 minutes and very in-depth. That's what we demand from people that deliver it. And so 80% of the time people send us decks, we throw it back saying this is not in-depth enough. And so they come back and they refresh that and bring data to us. MultifamilyU.com is a phenomenal way of learning stuff. There's nothing to pitch. We sell nothing on this website. So you're welcome to take all of our data and all of our toolkits. There's a variety of different toolkits available on this website for data-driven investors. So check out multifamilyu.com.
Perfect. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Neil your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Throw Neil Bawa into your favorite search engine and learn more about him, good and bad and the ugly. Go to multifamilyu.com and take advantage of all the great resources and thought process and data crunching that they've done on that site. Thanks again, Neil.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Bye, George.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.